Welcome back to Open Source Startup Podcast. This is Tim from Essence VC and our lovely co-host Ravi from Cowboy Ventures. We're super excited to have Katen, who is the co-founder and CEO of Union AI. Union AI is a scalable AI platform focused on AI orchestration running in your cloud. So welcome, Katen.
Hey, thank you for having me here, Tim and Ravi.
We're super excited to have you on. And like we always do on this podcast, we like to start all the way back at the beginning. So why don't you take us back to the roots of Union AI, which I imagine have something to do with Lyft and Flight. So take us back to the beginning and where the origin story is.
Not in a negative way, but it was an accidental starting story of Union, I would say. I did not really think about going into Union that I would be starting a company. Prior to that, I was at Lyft. I started at Lyft about in 2016, one of the first couple of few engineers in the Seattle area. And interestingly, I started leading a team that was responsible to deliver machine learning models into production. But before that, I need to give you a little bit of background where I come from. So I am an engineer now, maybe more than 20 years in the industry. Worked from banking to high-frequency trading to logistics, and cloud software, built Maps ground up. I was the first few people who started Maps at Amazon, first few people who started OCI here in Seattle. If you see through this journey, there's not been really, per se, the ML that we were doing in the last 10 years, but that was the interesting part. Cut back to 2016, I was leading a team that was responsible to deliver machine learning models in production. And this team was called the ETA team. So if you open up the Lyft app, it tells you 3 minutes to get it right. Don't ask me whether that number is right or wrong. It's the right number for you. And that's where the ML part kicks in. It's the right number for you because if you give this number wrong in some notion of the word wrong, you will switch. You'll switch from A to B. It could be because you lose trust in the number. Like it obviously is 3 minutes. It's actually eight. Or it obviously is three and I only have one, right? Whatever that number is, if you will lose trust or you will not accept it. And you'll switch. And the cost of switching is very low. So it's a big, big problem when you lose customers. And the other second number that we were responsible for is the dollar value to the destination. Is the, you know, how much you pay. And if you know, if you get that wrong, Lyft takes the other side of that payment. So it's an impact on the bottom line. Because both of these were critical numbers, many, many people thought that ETAs need to be optimal within the system. And it had company-level OKRs. And when there are company-level OKRs, there's a lot of stress. You have to consistently work. And we started looking at ML as a solution to optimize these numbers because these are not really purely software-driven numbers. We started experimenting with a lot of things like real-time traffic. What traffic is moving on the road? Like all the cars are moving, so we should be able to analyze the traffic. We started looking at how does a driver drive? Are you picking up on the left-hand side of the road, et cetera, et cetera. Like some of them were bespoke models, some were common models. We actually had a routing engine that was optimized to do certain things and we would update it every 10 minutes. And if you think about it, this is an ensemble set of models that's getting deployed consistently in production. It was like a juggling act. I don't think you can do this really well with just an arbitrary, not thought out process. But that's what we did. Actually, we're not doing it at 10 minutes at that time. We were doing it like once a month. We were moving to a 10-minute model, which is to do the real-time traffic. And that's where we started uncovering a lot of problems. And my team was, we actually lost one engineer to Tesla. And with him, we lost one of the models. And we had taken like a long time to build that model, months and millions of dollars. And we were not able to reproduce it. So reproducibility was a problem. All of the people within the team had to be productive in different axes and move really fast and kind of collaborate without really collaborating because there were like eight models that we were building and we had to deliver a production application. So these were the set of challenges we had. And we're like, okay, how do we do this? My background told me, hey, this is like a software product. We should be able to deploy this. That's when I was wrong. But we knew that we need some sort of orchestration to achieve these sort of things. And that's where we started building one level of orchestration. We looked around, used a thing like Airflow, hacked it completely. We had one of the largest Airflow clusters at that point in the world. It barely worked, but it worked. That started a big firehose from within the company saying that, hey, we have this problem. And when we dove deeper, we realized that there were many, many teams struggling to deliver similar sort of products that infused AI into the product itself. And when a team is unable to deliver, it actually impacts the team dramatically. Nobody wants to work on that team. Second is every time it becomes harder to deploy, it becomes even harder to get to the next stage. It's just like an increasingly harder solution. So we had to be like, okay, there is a fundamental problem in the way we are doing it. So how do we solve that? So we wrote a paper. I actually authored a paper that was 15 pages long or something. So like, hey, if somebody else builds this, I'm happy to use it because I did not want to do infrastructure myself. I'd done a lot of infrastructure at that point. Problem is almost everybody was busy with their own things and were like, hey, this cannot be built. That led to a Skunkworks project that became what is known as Flyte today, which was in 2017. And within like 6 months, we had about 20 critical teams from couponing to driver engagement, everything running on this one platform. And when a lot of ML things started running on this one platform, including a bunch of data things, we realized that this is what led to the creation of an ML platform at the company. So this is ML platform prior to the ML platform days. And when I look back, I think why did that happen is because I firmly believe that we were going through a change as an industry. We were infusing AI into our products. And many of the foundational software engineering things were kind of solved. If you think about me, a person like me who has a big infrastructure background, why is he working in AI? When I thought about it, I'm like, more impact can be created at this point. This will drive more software engineers like me to do AI products. And if this is true, then this is a trend that's going to happen. And if this trend is going to happen, they need to solve this problem. And so there were fundamental differences that I observed in the way we were developing software products versus AI products. And I'm taking software product as a pure software product, like a database. A database does not depend on external environment or factors. It is not changing based on seasonality. It just works. It continues to work in the same way. Yes, certain queries make it slower, certain queries make it faster, etc. But like it kind of behaves within its bounds. AI products don't behave like that. AI products just go crazy one day and then don't work the next day and solve a very impactful problem one day and don't solve the other day. And this is because they are like, in my opinion, they're like living objects. They need to be fed. They need to be retrained and so on. So when we observed that this was the change and then most people are going to be doing software engineering, there needs to be a new breed of tooling that needs to happen that solves the AI products delivery problem. And I started thinking, and I pitched this in 2020 after open sourcing Flyte, a part of our platform. Luckily, I just had an inbound. I didn't even know how to pitch. I kind of pitched. And I said, like, most people will be doing AI by 5 years. Looking back, it turns out to be true. I just literally saw my take. And I was like, people like me will be doing this. And if that is the reality, we pitched them saying that we need to be building the software today, the stack, the basics, the infrastructure for it today. And some people accepted, agreed. And that's how we started Union.
Very cool. Well, I want to plug one of your favorite investors, I suppose, Manish from Nava. I asked him what questions should ask you. And he brought a question we should ask. And I think it brings a really good point here. I think, like you said, you looked at Airflow back in the Lyft days. It didn't fulfill your needs. And I see that the term you're using is called AI orchestration, or even call it modern AI orchestration. So what is AI orchestration? Like, what is the difference between AI orchestration and just your normal, we know orchestration? Like, why do people should think about the difference? And what are things that are really hard to kind of shoehorn fit your non-AI orchestration tools to use here?
Thank you, Manish, for putting me on the spot, as usual. Orchestration is a very big and vague term, to be honest, right? When I'm saying orchestration, you are thinking about Airflow for some reason, which is great. I think Airflow has done a fantastic job of educating the folklore about itself. But I think Kubernetes is called an orchestrator too. I think overall AWS EC2 is an orchestrator at a very meta level. And so are companies like Temporal and so on in the far extreme. Orchestration, in my view, is how you get things done. Right. When you have a problem, I want to do it. I want an orchestrator to get those things done. And that's where lies the difference, number one. It's like what you want to be done when you are a data analytics orchestrator versus when you are an AI orchestrator are different. And I'll give you an example. If you're running data engineering style workloads and analytics style workloads, the impact of the orchestrator not being available is low. It's not zero, but it's not as high as your customers getting impacted in the moment. This looks like a small problem, But it's actually a very deep fundamental problem. The fundamental problem here is that we are not thinking about the first principles approach to solving the problem, and we are not solving it from that reliability point of view. In an AI orchestration world, you are actually putting your customers on direct path to the product. The AI products are usually used by customers. An example is some of our users use Union and Flyte to deliver cancer reports used by physicians in production. This is critical. You cannot just say like, all right, I don't have an analytics report right now. Let me rerun the entire backfill process today. That's not okay. That's not what they want. So that's one fundamental difference in how AI products are built. The second problem is AI products themselves, as I said, they are different from software products. The difference is in experimentation. In a typical database design, you could actually sit down and you'll say like, I'll use an LSM tree, I'll use the sort of query structure, blah, 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 blah. And you'll design all of it, but you may say like, I'll only do the MVP and solve it and then I'll improve it, right? In an AI product, you don't do that. You can't just say like, I will use a deep learning model, transformer type and so on. You may end up doing it, but first you say like, what are the objectives? What are the goals? And what are the things that I have available today? And then you start training ideas and you come up, you throw 15 different ideas on the wall. And when one sticks, you want to immediately convert it to production. So the round of trying different ideas is the tight inner loop that whoever is dealing with AI products have to really constantly do. And this means the software needs to be developed and designed from the point of view that I should be capable of experimenting rapidly. So let's take an example. Let's say I have an idea. I should be able to get the data, train a model, do a batch predictions, do an evaluation, or do a back testing rapidly. And oftentimes I start on my laptop. I don't want to use terabytes of data to train a model on day one. And then once I'm happy, I ship it in one line and it should go to as much scale as you want. So that's number one. The third aspect now is that there's a big heterogeneity when you're building an AI product. You will use tools like Spark or Ray. You will use GPUs, CPUs, remote services to deploy things. And you want a way to connect all of these seamlessly. And different people within the team will be doing all of these processes at the same time. So as I was telling you, in my team, there were 8 people building 8 different models. Some of them were in different stages of their life. Some of them were deployed, some were getting trained, some of them were getting tested. Like I was at OpenAI recently, and do you think OpenAI doesn't have GPT-5 or whatever the next version is? They do. They have some variant of it. It may not be the GPT-5, right? But it may have some variant. Because this like it's like a training gym. You have to constantly go to the gym every day and you constantly have to deliver, which is the experimentation phase. And the day it looks like, oh, this is beating my GPT-4 version, it's better, let's turn it on, right? That's how the process goes. And so these are the 3 big differences because of which I feel AI orchestration is its own new field. You have to think about experimentation. You have to think about productionization. You have to think about people using it. And you have to think about heterogeneity in the infrastructure requirements, which is a new added complexity. The heterogeneity causes further challenges. As a species, we are building some of the most complex software today in AI. But we don't have very good, we are not training all the new engineers to think about distributed systems and so on. And I think it's the right thing to do, right? Because you don't want everybody to become PhDs in distributed systems and PhDs in applied ML or ML. You want them to become better at like one area, but they still have to build these complex products. So we have, as a group, we have to simplify the access to this infrastructure and the building of complex infrastructure by assimilating all the knowledge that we have had across the last 10 years, 15 years of building large distributed systems into a very simple consumable format. And with these 5 goals is what we started building, what we call as AI Orchestrator.
Awesome. I love it. The AI Orchestrator. I'd love to dig into the story behind Flyte and kind of how that ties into Union's story. So when Flyte launched, was it kind of like right from the get-go really popular? And then did that popularity end up leading you to want to start Union? Or was it kind of around the same time? Because it looks like both were kind of launched within a year of each other.
Yeah. In open source, Flyte existed since 2016, late 2016, 2017. It was building only for the company internally. We never thought about really like open sourcing it even. We talked to a bunch of different companies when we were at Lyft who were like, hey, we are trying to build something similar. Would you be open sourcing this? And we were like, to open source will take 2 years or something. And so that's how we ended up open sourcing it. We also did have the opportunity to really think about the problem much more deeply for about 3 or 4 years inside a company. Granted, it was very much from within the company point of view, which has a few disadvantages, but it does have a lot of advantages from robustness, scale, robustness of use cases. And I was telling somebody, like, it's just lucky to be at Lyft at that point. Because Lyft and Uber were in fierce competition. They were brokers. Brokers have no business being in the business, really, but for providing efficiency. So I have worked in high frequency trading at Citadel, and we used to say, what's the business that we are in at that point? And the business was to bring efficiency to the market, right? And that is what a broker, even in the logistics or real world, is. You want to make it easier to get a ride and move easier and so on. So, and efficiency, to bring in efficiency, you have to start using AI. And so we applied AI. At Lyft, we had about 150 data scientists or machine learning engineers. We had a team of 1,500 or 2,000 people, which is a big number for that time. And remaining were software engineers who were doing ML products. So about by the end of when I left Lyft, 600 plus people used to use Flyte on a weekly basis. Lots of data scientists, consistent problems, ML in every aspect, from fraud to self-driving cars, so vision problems to forecasting to predictions, to ETA to routing, everywhere there was ML. So we were like, okay. So we were very exposed to a lot of use cases. But it was very hard as Lyft to completely only work on Flyte, right? That would not be possible. Neither would it be possible to only work on ML platform, which is an even bigger problem. So we had a small team working on this. And this is one of the reasons why we open source. We open source because we're like, hey, let's get like-minded people who are reaching out to us. Let's work with them. Let's get it to open source and we can collaborate. We can also probably add more things that would work across companies and scale it more and, like, you know, distribute some load. That was really the reason. Also, because we had also done Envoy prior to that, open sourcing of Envoy. Lyft was very pro open sourcing, because what it also did is a fantastic way of attracting great talent. What ended up happening is when we open sourced, 2020 was the pandemic year, really impacted Lyft dramatically. It impacted my team. It impacted the company. Sadly, 30% of our colleagues were let go. And this got me thinking. I had spent about close to five years in the company. And I was like, what are my next steps? But when I started talking to a lot of people outside, they were like, not everybody's aware of the problems of AI products. It was just like, you're talking, people didn't even have machine learning platforms. Forget about platforms. They didn't even have models in production connected to business product outcomes. So we're like, okay, this is going to be a tough challenge. So we said, we'll keep it open source and we'll work with Lyft essentially to donate it to Linux Foundation, because the basics of creating the right solution has to come from open source. The reason is because open source, it will be the large companies that will adopt it first, right? And then have the problems of AI first. And so if they were working independently, you will get a huge fragmentation in the ecosystem. There's an A way of solving and a B way of solving and a C way of solving. So we wanted to avoid that. So that's how we decided to open source, and we started start the company around similar-ish time.
The profile companies are using you seems to tend to be larger companies. And, you know, I think Airflow has all kinds of companies. There are even more up-and-coming orchestrators, not AI orchestrators, but just general orchestrators. Also tends to have, I see more startup, more companies. So
yeah.
Talk about, like, why larger companies are more of your user base. Is it because they're actually more on the AI side, need something orchestrated, like, in this nature? Or what got Lyft Flyte to be the most attractive option for them?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. And we often think about this. Oftentimes, because of the large logos, the smaller companies get overshadowed. There are a lot of smaller companies who use Flyte as well. But we see a bimodal distribution between the user base. A lot of them are large companies, but a lot of them are small companies. So they have to have one key reason why they use Flyte. They have to have some product that has AI infused into it. That means AI is in production, or it is intended to go to production. That's when they start using Flyte. And larger companies have a significant problem, because today they are facing an inordinate amount of stress to actually deliver more value from their AI in production. That's one. Second, they have lots of people doing AI. And the third one is that they are already felt the pain of either building it internally or trying to build certain things on top of its Airflow or a bunch of other, like everything else. And they're like, you know, we need to find a better solution. So those are the companies, and they're leading the AI world, right? They're like, LinkedIn has tons of AI models in production, like large language models are tiny in front of their large personalization models. Like literally I was talking to one of them and they're like, large language models are tiny, 300 terabytes of data. Who cares? Like, that's like, you know, put it on disk and just train. Like, I was same way I was talking to Meta, and the same kind of responses I get, while LPM models have like petabytes of data going into them. It's just massive scale difference. But the experimentation challenge exists and so on. So they want to solve a problem that can solve the experimentation to the large scale. The smaller companies are like, hey, we have to get to production. We have seen a huge amount of uptick in biotech. Because if you think about it, the next frontier, I think, for AI is biotech. I don't want to say biotech, it's healthcare. And those people are reliant on AI to make it possible to deliver production. So those are the other companies that use us a lot. And it's not only them, it's like a bunch of other companies, newer age, Gen AI plus AI companies, and a lot of large companies who have actually have things running in production and who want it to be reliable. So these are the two sectors in which I see the most amount of traction. But it's very hard to also put every logo on the website. It's like 4,000 companies I can't really put.
Awesome. And I want to talk a little bit about how you grew Flyte, because this is a very noisy space, increasingly noisy as more and more folks are trying to productionize Gen AI models. How have you actually been able to grow and differentiate? Has content been a big part of your strategy? Or what are some of the like growth hacks that you've learned the last couple of years?
I think number one growth hack is community. And this is not an easy growth hack. It's a very, very complicated growth hack. Community is ever demanding, rightly so, but it is ever demanding. So you have to be ready to immerse yourself into that, like literally in service of the community at some point. Acquisition of the customer is where you'll probably put growth hacks. And that has actually been a weak spot for us. We think it could be much more than what it is today. You know, initially we thought like, okay, we should get individuals using, et cetera. But that's not right. Like for Flyte to use, you have to have a Kubernetes cluster. It's like individuals don't have Kubernetes clusters. It's only organizations have Kubernetes clusters. Understanding that is critical. Like one, there are hundreds of millions of dollars of compute being orchestrated by Flyte. So again, that's a dollar value barrier. So there are like lots of very, very young, bright people cannot really make use of it. So what we did is we started thinking about these two problems and we said, okay, let's build. Initially, we targeted on larger companies. And we said, these are luminaries. People will follow them. And what we did is about 3 years ago, we started a small community sync meeting where people would come in and like talk about what they're doing or how they're using Flyte. And today it's become pretty big. Almost every 2 weeks or every month, there is a company that comes and presents. And just today was Adarga AI, which is doing defense contracting with building LLMs and vision models for European defense companies, right? And all of them are now using Flyte underneath. And so that has helped many people understand how to put AI in production by learning from other people. And that has really helped. I highly recommend people follow the YouTube channel, and it's not paid. Nobody's told them to do this. These are companies who come in. Like Stripe came in and said, after introduction of Flyte, the experimentation velocity went up 2,500%. And when a company like Stripe says that, and it's had sizable revenue impact, other people want to learn. It takes time though. It is not like a quick shot process. The product's not made to be like that, right? So we had to do a different organic growth. What that ends up doing is it creates super fans though. People love the product. They will say like, yeah, if I move companies, I will ask my new company to start using the product. And this is another viral growth internally that's been happening. It's very organic and it's very hard to steal from, right? Because you've now embedded yourself into the psyche of people. And we think it's critical. It's critical to build a sticky product. You have to let people feel that it actually gives them more value. And we are not being salesy over there. So yeah, don't try to over-monetize your community. Be genuinely helpful. Most bigger the company, more technical they are, more technical they expect you to be. And they like talking with people who have that similar technology background. So connect with them at the technical level. And evangelization never stops. If you are the CEO of the company, you have to do those talks. That's the other thing. And sometimes they'll not end up using your paid product. Many times they'll end up using your open source product. It's okay.
So I want to talk about the transition from Flyte to Union. So you started a company, Union, right? sort of like building a company around this ecosystem. And it's really different but amazing community you already started, right? From the Lyft days and now into this. Like, what is the thought process of starting the company? And how did you want to go about this? Because like I mentioned, right, it's a very different type of orchestrator. Although this term is very generally used everywhere. So it's not like, I'm not entirely sure this is very clear to everybody.
It's not.
Unless you already adopted it, right? You probably evaluated, you spent time into it. So maybe talk about like, how did you start Union? What are early lessons when you decided to start a company? What are things that you thought would be the focus of the company and maybe some early challenges of figuring out how to grow, right? Did you start to grow the community first? Or we try to like commercialize some products? We're just very curious about how the first year feels like.
How the first year is like. As a technical person starting a company, it's a very interesting learning journey. So first you have to come to terms with yourself. You're learning what is go-to-market as a term. You're learning how to work with, you know, thinking about money. But one thing was sure, like I remember my small internal letter that I wrote to people. It's like, we have two paths in front of us. I said, like, we could just say we are data orchestrator, because we could, right? We could tune it to do these kind of things. We're like, that's a dilution of the product, but we could do it just to garner easier attention. Or we could just keep on going down the path of saying that we are an AI platform. We are building an AI platform. And that's what Union is. Union, we are building an AI platform, but you can't just build an AI platform because it's massive. So the word Union itself came from the fact that we did not want to do everything on our own. We were like, what if we unify things and get things together, either through partners or fill in the blanks, wherever we can find the issues or use. And that's why the Union is the word, like, of union of things. And you're like, okay, so there is actually an opportunity to build a fantastic open source community here, which does not dilute Union's mission, but just improves Union's mission. And Union's mission is to build the AI platform, right? So if that is true, then we won't have to build a toy open source project, because we had not, right? We had already built a very big, massive tank. So like, okay, let this tank be very, very usable and front, but we knew about a lot of things that we needed to do. A few things were, when we started doing it, the first 1 year, we really focused on, okay, how do I increase adoption of Flyte? How do I get Flyte to be a known entity? If you start building commercial only, you have to choose. Let's go the commercial route or let's go the open source route. You can't do both. You know, four people in the company, how can you do both, right? So we said we'll do open source. And in open source, we said it was built for large scale, massive deployments. Let's make it easy. Easy to get started with. Easy, like literally, like it should be super fast. Within its bounds, right? Of course, it's not like on a laptop or something, but we wanted to get it to a very, very quick point of value, right? Proof of value that you get from the product should be really rapid, because without that, you will not be able to see the value. So we focused, and what we realized is we were actually changing the laws of the game. We were building something brand new. Nobody had done like this crazy container orchestrator in open source on Kubernetes, not designed for large-scale batch compute, running at large scale, fast, efficient, easy, secure, all working in within a matter of minutes. That's crazy, but we've spent about a year, year and a half doing that. And that is why, if you see, like, you know, that's the other answer to your previous question, why Flyte has grown is probably that 1.5 years of focus. That being said, we were always also thinking about commercial stuff. We're like, okay, what is the commercial? Where do we start it? So first we built something in year one. We spent like, okay, we'll take half a resource and we build something. It, again, focus is important. It's a completely wrong idea. Nobody bought it. It was completely fully hosted. We didn't even really sell it. We just went to a couple of people, like, hey, would you buy this? Would you want to try it? And we were like, I will not put my data in your cloud. You are a seed company. And that's what we realized. Oops, data is the key when you're building AI products. And nowadays, more and more, you're seeing data is becoming a bigger key. And so we said, it has to be BYOC, just because of the nature of the data. People want to keep that data. And I think it's going to become even more encumbered. So people are going to be like, I'm not going to give you any of my data. I don't trust you. And if this is the reality, then we've started building that route. We are like, this is a hard problem to run arbitrary compute, which is Spark, Ray, and other things in your cloud. And we talked to a bunch of different customers, and they all said, we need help in managing the system. So that was our version one of the product that we started building. And that only started after about a year and a half in the company's life.
Awesome. So when you think back on the company journey so far, I know it's still early on. What have some of the most pivotal decisions been that your team's made?
Yeah, we said kind of the memo that we said that after a bunch of discussions, we could have gone down the data orchestrator route. We said, no, we're building an AI orchestrator. We will think about training, how to scale, GPU, accelerators. Anyways, that aligned with our skill set better. But we said that we'll make a specific decision to do this. When other people were saying, like, what is an AI orchestrator? What is AI? Actually, some people were asking. Only top 50 companies in the world need it. And we still decided to stick with it. It was a pivotal decision because it's a decision that could have also broken the company at some point, especially in summer of 2022. People really did not think AI was valuable. And we said, no, we'll stick with it. This is what it is. This is what we are. And the second decision was sticking with open source because it's a long lead time. To build a big, thick open source community is longer, like a deeper community.
So obviously AI is the hottest thing ever. Have you noticed any difference of your customers or users actually are looking to leverage Flyte for different things? Obviously LLMs is a big term, you know, and there's a whole bunch of these kind of stuff happening. Are they using you pretty much the same way, or are you seeing more demand for even LLM specific things? I don't know, fine-tuning, yes. Right? Take open source LLM mod or something of that nature. Maybe talk about like any shifting even that you're seeing on your side.
I'll answer it in two ways. Has something changed fundamentally with what people are doing? I don't think so. I think they have accepted that AI is needed. That's the biggest change in my opinion. And this is why the growth has been much better in the past 1 year probably. But there has been, on the second aspect, a demand from the product to do more. Absolutely, right? That we are seeing. Like, it's very weird to say that we did think that this would happen. And this is where we think we can still continue building Flyte for free in open source while Union can start differentiating. Some of the core principles of Flyte are built on like basic constructs, which can be leveraged into these multimodal and RAG and some similar sort of things. Another thing, it's very weird, like about a year and a half ago, I was talking with the CTO of my company, like probably it was 2 years ago. I said that there is this serving graph that's going to become very, very important. And we are like, we didn't know the shape and form of it. We're like, it's going to be very important. And we think we have an edge in how we can do some of this. Now, prioritizing and getting time to do some of it is very important because we are inundated with our current set of requests, but we think that's where the Union will continue to grow. So yeah, so there is some of our customers have come to us and like, what about multimodal survey? I want to do this. We like it. And I'm like, why do you like it? And we kept on diving and we realized the problem is the same. It's ML engineers, data scientists writing the code and software engineers deploying. And they're like, ah, this is a problem. We don't want it. So I'm seeing the repeat of what we were doing with the batch training and previous worlds happening in this multimodal inference world that's almost onto us at the moment. And so we are like, yeah, this is great. We should find time and build it out because we have a design. We have written everything down. It's like, all right, let's ship it.
When you think back to some of the things that were really hard for you to learn early on as a founder and like you on your journey, what are some things that you wish other founders had shared with you earlier?
Lots of things. Probably knowing more founders would have helped in the early part of the journey. So I did talk to some more senior CEOs. I think they have forgotten the initial year or 2 years of their journey, right? I was very lucky to talk with the CEO of Tableau and the CEO of Coursera, CEO of Mode, and a bunch of other CEOs. And they all remembered that it was like we were all working, it was cool, and it was hard, but it was, you know, cool. But I think it's in the first 2 years, it's really you have to expect the unexpected. Like in our world, when we first started in 2020, 2021, right? You know, the growth metric was just going through the roofs again. And that was it. Growth was the metric that people were using to value a company on. And you start expecting some other things, right, from your company. And you talk to investors and all investors like, all right, this is what we could do. And we're like, no, hold on. We'll do something else in 6 months. And 6 months later, the entire world changes. So I think what somebody could have told me is like, don't try to time the market. Just get, like, go raise around or whatever whenever you can. Or be conservative with your valuations, et cetera. Like we have luckily been, but like we see that some others are struggling at this point with that sort of mistake. Also, timing the market is kind of impossible. Other thing is like, which areas do you spend more time in? I think initial, if you are an open source company, I think product and community becomes very critical. Initially, while as a follow-up, it has completely evolved into like sales and marketing and business, and mostly sales. And that's a big change. So knowing all of that and knowing that ahead before starting a company is critical, I think, because sometimes some folks may not be expecting to do certain things as you're supposed to do as a CEO. In reality, it's a janitorial job. So.
Well, I think maybe you already touched on this, but I guess, you know, still want to do the last question. Is there anybody that's jumping into this like AI tooling workload, you know, as an open source company, one single advice you give them? Because I think you're talking about all your learnings or challenges, but is there like just one thing you often tell them? Or maybe even your Lyft coworkers are going to start an open source company. I talked to quite a few. What is the number one advice you've been talking to them already, or you want to talk to them about starting a company?
Open source companies are hard. And the reason is, it's like, you know, pulling two rabbits out of your hat. The first rabbit you pulled out, that's how you become open source. And then you have to pull out the second one. So you have to be ready for it. And this doesn't happen by pulling the same rabbit in a partial way in the first part and then, you know, improving that rabbit by hosting it. That's not how you can do it. I think what happened in the last few years is open source was seen as a go-to-market route purely. And that is good and bad in some ways. Good, it created a lot of companies. Bad that, you know, some people started distrusting open source as a purely way to make money, which is not the reality. Like, there's a lot of good open source in the world that just has no commercial interest behind it. And those are the most popular ones if you think about it. But recently what has happened is with the cloud providers and the war of cloud providers and open source companies, it is real. It impacts you. Right. And when the market changes, the questions from an open source company changes. They forget that you are an open source company and they think, oh, you've been around for 2.5 years. You should be doing XYZ in revenue and so on and so on. So as a founder, decide if you really want to do open source. There's no like wishy-washy about it. You cannot be like, I'll do open source and do commercial a little bit. Like I've talked to a lot of people who have started with their commercial route and they're like, okay, we are deciding to do open source. And I'm like, okay, why do you want to do open source? They're like, we will get marketing. I'm like, it's not just marketing. Like, you have to commit to it. You don't get marketing just by saying that we'll open source and we'll get marketing. And like, decide why, if you want to do open source, commit to it. And know that you are committing to a really the double rabbit pulling journey. Because knowing is, you know, half of the battle. Because you'll go ups and downs. There will be lots of ups and downs in an open source company. And be committed to it. I still firmly believe being conservative in your spend when you're an open source founder is good. And the reason is some people say that Databricks or Confluent look at the success and they started doing great things after whatever, you know, whenever they started the go-to-market. They could have done this earlier. And I kind of, my counterpoint to that is you don't have counterfactual here. You can't prove that 7 years of purely dedicating themselves to open source did not really build the company for the next 10 years. You don't know that. If they had done earlier, maybe it would have died earlier. Who knows, right? This is the sort of questions I don't know the answer to, but I do see that companies who are successful actually have good open source products. Their products are really, really successful, good open source products. And they all took a long time. Redis did not become an overnight success. Redis took a long time. Kafka, actually people kept on asking, but what is the difference between Kafka and RabbitMQ and like things like that, like in the beginning. And the practitioners knew, so many people did not. Spark was the same way, right? Comparing to Hadoop and so on. They took time. All of them took time because you have to build a strong community.
Awesome. Well, this was a fantastic conversation. We think the audience is going to learn a ton from it. Thank you so much, Ketan. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here. Hopefully the audience will find it useful.